Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the No Prize Podcast. Those astute of you will realise that I am not the professor. The professor is off with his sibling with a hospital appointment, so we wish both the professor and son all the No Prize Podcast power we possibly can. Hope everything goes all well for you dudes. As always, we are joined by Lucas, who shall never be nicknamed, it seems. Hey, Lucas, how's it going?
Man, I am doing great. You know, struggling through some of these books. I'm in wonder of the events of the last week or last couple weeks. Unfortunately, Marvel, they're getting their butts handed to them, man. Freaking DC is just freaking clowning. They're even, DC, it's gotten so bad that DC is copying title for title the same stuff that Marvel is doing and doing it even better. And that's why, and that's what I'm talking about. So Forceworks 2020, yep. DC just put out a title just like it, but they did it even better. It's called Cybernetic Summer. Cybernetic Summer.
Just rolls off your
tongue. And they did an even better job. So Marvel, you guys got to. I think you guys will get it together because you guys got some good titles coming out, some good stuff that a lot of people are waiting on. But right now, you guys are grinding it out right now, just spending time and spending money, man. So what we got first?
I think you make a valid point. I think without the pull of like those types of books like the Immortal Hulk, and without the power of the X books, which kind of lost their way a little bit, at least it seems from my point of view, it doesn't seem that, you know, Marvel have a lot to hang the hat on, do they? I mean, the Empire, which we're going to talk about in a minute, I don't know, man. It just seems to me like just another crossover, doesn't it? It's like just another thing. It's just, I don't know.
I like the story when they did it 3 times ago, right? This whole Empire stuff, you know, because so let's just to give everybody a context on what's going on, because I know nobody's reading it, because nobody cares.
Right? Hey, I read it. I still don't care, but I read it.
You know, everybody understands. Well, everybody kind of understands the whole Kree Skrull war: blue guys versus green guys. That's all you really need to know. Blue guys versus green guys, children caught in the middle, you know, freaking, you know, Avenger versus Fantastic Four, you know, whatever, right? But then all of a sudden they decide that they need to pair together because an even greater threat is out there called the Gotati, who I was aware of. And now here's the thing. I always wonder whatever happened to those guys. So to see those guys actually pop up in the title is great. I just wish it hadn't happened like this. This is not cool. This is not the way I wanted to see these guys at all, man. So once again, what's one of my pet peeves? Good guys versus good guys. Remember, because one of the Prince of Gotati, he was a good guy, and now he's a bad guy, right? He's full of himself with the whole Celestial Messiah thing. The guy's name is Koi. I forget what his first appearance was, but yeah, that's the guy that's trumping around, freaking. He's got all types of stuff going on, but and this particular one, and let me give the credit to who it is. Once again, we're talking about Empire 3, everybody. Story by Al Ewing, Dan Slott. Script by Al Ewing. Art by Valerio Schiede. I'm gonna say it that way. color artist Marte Garcia, letter by VC's Joe Caramanga, and several covers out there, and I'll get to those later. So it's got a full cast, man. It's got all types of going. Which, you know, if it's a war, you know, might as well do a whole war going on. You know, Captain America, Iron Man, Captain Marvel, Black Panther, Ghost Rider, Hulk, Thor, the Fantastic Four, Emperor Hulking Super Skrull, Tanith the Pursuer, Captain Glory, Mergen, Koi, and Swordsman. So the whole thing that's going on, there's a whole big invasion of Earth, and all the superheroes they can do right now, except for teenagers, because they're outlawed from doing anything superheroish.
as I
Oh
was
God,
having.
Marvel. Oh God. They all they're trying to do is they're trying to stave off this invasion. And what they figured out is there's one, maybe they've got one, maybe one shot, and that is to send Captain Marvel into the sun with the sword, and maybe the thing will freaking kill her, but at the same time, while she's dying, it's going to kill off the big thing that's replenishing the enemy forces. And there's a whole big for it. No, she didn't. Yes, yeah, she did. No, she didn't. You know, we love Captain Marvel, even though I, as a fan, I don't love Captain Marvel that much right now. So I could care less. Go ahead.
The next
Go
book's
ahead.
gonna
Send
be
her to
fun
the
for you
sun.
then.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead. Send her to the sun. I don't care. Freaking let her do something. You know. That's how bad it is. That's how bad it is. So before without I hate to get it straight, but that's how bad it is for some of us that they Marvel understands that we hate this character so much that within her own book, within the last year, 15 new characters.
That's a digression, but yes, I have my own theory. I have my own theory on Captain Marvel, which we'll get
15.
to, but
15, Johnny. 15. One even had her own freaking book for a little bit.
Star,
Star.
yeah.
So we'll get into the other one who will probably get her own book rather than getting ready to just Captain Marvel stuff. But yeah. But the big oh, so the big thing is that, you know, once again, we're marching towards this whole sword saga. And then once again, you got Hulkling sitting there with the Star Sword. And then they figured out that the best thing that they maybe do, Black Panther figures out, hey, if you loan me the sword, I think I could do something with it. And then it's like, all right, send it the sword. And I'm like, all right, what's going to happen? Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. They don't show us what's happening with the sword. That's it. That's what every. Oh my goodness. All right. So we cut to two people that I don't care about. Once again, I've never even heard of them before. Don't care about them. Tanoth, right? And the Pursuer, or Pursuer Tanoth. And you know, guys, like, hey, no, you're kind of suspicious. Who are you really? And then it breaks out, hey, I am Arkil, Empress of the Skrulls, survivor of Galactus, mother of Anel, holy martyr, grandmother to Durek the Eighth, the king of all space.
That's a
And soon
mouthful.
my yep, and soon my grandson will be the absolute ruler of the galaxy. Okay. Great. Great. Fine. You got somebody's grandmama up there. Freaking just acting crazy. And then once again, let's talk about the art. And I'm only going to talk about one panel, and
Go on
that's
then.
that panel right there where she was introduced. Tell me why, out of everything, they've got to bring my eyes down to her crotch. So they got me just looking center space at somebody's grandma's crotch. I mean, it is not even in a normal way. She's like, oh. Like, hey, take this, Johnny. Take all this. You know, like somebody's nasty. So like somebody's nasty grandma. So I don't know what to think about this. Maybe there's a reason why this was necessary, but I'm gonna let you give you your thoughts about it before I go into the covers.
Well, I don't have a lot to say to that, actually. This book feels like just noise. It's a talky book, which kind of explains motives, which you know sooner or later are going to get switched around to incorporate more good guy fighting, good guy stuff. You know, we've already had the revelation that Iron Man was taken in and he feels all bent out of shape about it. There's no action in this book. And this is one of my bugbears when it comes to these types of crossovers, is that you buy the main series and you think to yourself, I'm going to buy the six issues at a ridiculous price, I hasten to add. It's like $4.99 for this book or something. Crazy. So you buy the six issues, and all the key things you want to see happen in it happen somewhere else. And
Absolutely, yeah.
it's like, why? Why even bother having these bookend chapters? You might as well just save yourself six issues, all right, and then just kind of put the story in to the other issues. You might as well just do that, because I
Yeah.
swear to God, the only people who are buying this book must be buying all the others. I mean, if I was, I mean, I've bought event books before, and I tend to try and avoid the crossovers where possible, because I want the main story. I want this. If I have to go looking for loads of issues from this character and that character and books that I don't buy normally, which I know is the marketing technique, I get it. I'm not a moron. But as a reader, I'm like, you know what? My wallet doesn't stretch that far. It's not Mr. Fantastic's wallet. Yeah.
Yes.
Doesn't
Yeah.
stretch. So if you're going to put out a mini series, at least have key parts and key action in the mini series, please. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
I agree with you on the art. I think the art has a very Marvel style to it at the moment. This kind of this look is quite common. It certainly shows up in the Captain Marvel book, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. And yeah, funny enough, I thought the same panel that you pulled apart, I was kind of thinking, not that I'm into crotch shots and all, but I was kind of thinking, why is the front of a dress bent backwards? If
Yeah.
the back of the dress is blowing kind of up, why is the front of the dress getting blown the other way? It's like, you know, I'm not particularly into the whole, like, you know, grandma crotch shot thing, although that probably is a thing somewhere on the internet. It just makes no sense from a kind of like, you know, that's pretty much someone looking at the picture and saying, you know what, you can't do that, put something in the way, and that's what's happened. This whole Empire story for me, I'm not going to clobber it, because there are people who are like Bud and like yourself, love Kree Skrulls, and Bud remembers the Katari the first time around and all that. So I'm not going to clobber this book, but it is very much an Invisible Woman. I'm kind of like passing this by on the rack. If I didn't have to talk about it, I wouldn't have to read it. So I blame you
Yes,
for me having to read this. You put this down here.
I forced people, I forced you to read it because I was hoping that you would come up with some reason why Marvel was trying to charge $150 for this book.
You got me. I mean, and it's a low page count as well. It's crazy. So go on.
Let me
How many covers are there?
so there was like quite a few, there's like seven covers out there or something like that. And then let me pare it down to the basics. There's cover A, then cover E with Tony S. Daniel with the screed with the Super Scroll on there. Then there was an Ed McGuinness variant cover with Grimm fighting the Super Scroll once again. So it's all Super Scroll, Super Scroll, Super Scroll. And then there's a cover G, which was the secret variant cover. And that's probably what pisses me off the most, because the way secret variants work is you gotta trust Marvel that they're gonna have something really good and juicy on that cover that's gonna make it worth some money in the near future. No such thing freaking happen. Nobody cares about the grandmother of Derek the Eighth. Okay. Nobody cares about anything that really happened in this book. There's a whole bunch of there's so much stuff in there that I don't care about. I say, oh, okay, I would care about that if, but I'm not that crazy, and then they've got like Ben Grimm and all those guys, and I forget the Agents of Atlas, and I forget no the Age of Wakanda, excuse me, the Agents of
Wakanda.
Wakanda. Yeah, they've got those guys in there, and those are the guys that are on the cover G. That's the one that's $150. And you know,
$150.
right? And you know what? I don't care. I don't care about the Agents of Wakanda enough. They have had no stories. They're supposed to be the protectors of Africa right now. I haven't had a good story from them where they actually protected anything from Africa or gave any type of insight on Africa whatsoever, right? For me to want to spend $150 on those guys. Yet here we are, It's a $150 book, which I guarantee you, and within the next 7 or 8 months, you can find for probably 10 bucks. So what you've basically come up with is Marvel basically screwed some speculators over who were hoping that something big was going to happen in this book, and it just didn't. Congratulations, Marvel.
And there you go. All
Yeah.
right, so is this so this a clobber for you then, I take it?
It is a dumpster fire. It is a Mephisto.
Oh,
The Mephisto
we are
for me.
going.
Not,
It is not a
yeah,
good place.
not even mildly entertaining insect. So bad. So bad. Like what? Like you can't set up a panel like, okay, something's gonna happen and then just not have it happen.
Oh,
You
Mephisto,
know,
class.
I mean, and then you also got to consider this was not a regular $3.99 book. This was a $5 book as well.
It's crazy, isn't it? Absolute crazy. When you've got to think about the kind of things that, yeah, you know, the amount of books there are right now, unbelievable, but hey ho. Okay, so there you are. Empire 3 is a bit of a strikeout, it seems. Whilst we're talking Empire, we might as well jump into the next book, which is, unfortunately for Lucas, Captain Marvel 18, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Corey Smith, inks by Adriana Di Benedetto, colours by Tamara Bonvillain, and letters by VCs Clayton Cowles. Now, Bud texted us while we were talking about the books earlier this week to what we were going to talk about, and his message to everyone from I'm really sorry I'm going to miss hating on Captain Marvel. So I think Bud is pretty much going to sort of clobber this. So we've already got a clobber in the back there. So Lucas, was there anything redeeming about this book that kind of made you think, yeah, well, you know what this Empire
The
thing is?
number one book this week that sold out.
Is it?
Yes.
No way.
So you tell Mr. Anti Pants to calm the hell down, because this was the number one book that sold out, and there was one reason why. And once again, this comes back to Captain Marvel being so boring, right? So let me give you some context the way I think about some certain characters, and this goes back to the this. Go ahead.
No, go for it. I'm saying go for it.
So this goes back to the 80s ways of writing sitcoms. Once audience viewership started to wane and people started to get bored with the characters, they would do two things. They would bring a dog into the mix or a cat. See,
Okay.
you hear what I'm saying? A dog or a cat. Or they would bring in a new family member, a long lost family member. Or a new baby into the mix, just to spice things up and hopefully bring attention to the whole character. So what have we had from Cat Marvel over the last couple of years? We've had a cat, right?
Yep.
We've had Star, who's just a new thing, right? That built off the Infinity Stone, right? And now we had the long lost family member that she never knew about, and I forget what her name is, like Ark. It's not Arkil. I forget what her name is. But Arkil or whatever her name is, Encreel or whatever her name is the daughter of her mother that she never knew about. Doesn't really they don't really explain like anything about fathership or anything like that. They just go right into it and they hey but let's pull back into what's going on. The Hulkling has had some type of incident happen on another planet and he needs the newly minted Captain Marvel to serve as the accuser and go check it out and figure out what's going on. She arrives and she finds the troops heavily in battle against this person, right? This person is freaking holding her own up until Captain Marvel flies in, and then the person automatically lays down the gun and say, hey, whoa, 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 go ahead and accuse me. So Captain Marvel accuses the person, freaking puts the hammer down, and finds all types of stuff to include the fact that she is her sister, because she can see her mother in her. So after all that, She's supposed to put her in cuffs and take her back to Hawking, but she says, forget that. I'm just taking off. Right? Doesn't say where she's going, why she's going. She just takes off. Right? Mm-hmm. And then that is the end of that. And that's all you need, right? Because I've seen some stuff where there's going to be buddy cop adventures with two happening, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a whole freaking menagerie of activity happening. That is worth the price of admission just for at least. So here's why what's funny. You know how many covers there were for this thing? Two.
Great.
And they were regularly priced. Good. They didn't go some crazy ass number. They were just regularly priced. You could get them. That's why they all sold out. There's probably going to be a second print out there or a third print with the sister on the cover. But this is if you find it on your shelf, go ahead and pick it up because people are definitely interested in this character. Mm-hmm. As far as story, you didn't need a story. All you needed was a setup to getting us to this character, and then we'll figure out what's going on later. So for me, this is a flame on. This is a gotta pick this up.
Okay, cool.
That's the way to do it. Is it a little too late for Captain Marvel? Who knows? What did you think?
So the character's name is called L'Oreal because we're worth it.
Isn't that the name of a shampoo?
Yeah, that's exactly the tagline. That's cool. I'd like a Captain Marvel book where Captain Marvel gets to be Captain Marvel. Right? So in the last storyline, she got taken over by a suit, and it was the supreme villain who then used her to go and capture all the Avengers, and then she ended up becoming all the Avengers to defeat the bad guy, and now she's become the Accuser. I like that she's kind of getting into a Kree identity a little bit, but what happened to Captain Marvel just being Captain Marvel? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's I don't know. The idea about the kind of adding a character in, I don't necessarily have a problem with it. My problem is that it seems that the Marvel Brain Trust gets one good idea, like, ooh, I know, let's bring in a secret brother sister. All right? And you think, oh, okay, that's cool. So they're going to do that. But they're not just doing it in this book, they're also doing it in Spider-Woman. There's the hint of a hidden brother in Spider-Woman already. So it's like, can you not think of more than one good plot device between everybody that works at Marvel? You know, we've said this before. So often they come up with, you know, key story elements, and then they run them all the same time, the same story in all the various books. I don't know. I thought this book was... I liked the book because I could read it without having too much of the Empire BS thrown in. I mean, yeah, there's going to be some overhang in there. I tell you how bad the Empire is, the Empire storyline. There's a little panel somewhere that says, for reasons why Carol has got the hammer, please read Empire 2. I don't need to read Empire 2. I don't. I'm all right, thanks. Cheers. She's got the hammer. That's all I need to know. Move on. The art was all right. There were a couple of panels where faces seems to change and they're not consistent. And Sue Storm looks awful. You know, I just didn't want to get to that.
Between her and Mr. Fantastic, they look like parents right now. they look like they've got a couple of teenagers. They're winding down. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I like the colors. I thought Tamara Bonvalon with the colors look great. It gives that book, gives it a proper, full on epic look vibe. I'm not going to flame on this book. I'm going to Mr. Fantastic because I'm interested to see how it goes. But I do take your point that, you know, Captain Marvel has had shed loads of new characters thrown at her. You know, I sometimes think it's a little bit like it's a little bit like Superman in that sometimes the characters are so powerful you don't know story wise what to do with it, so you've got to put like emotional aspects into it, and yeah. You know, I think that's what Kelly Thompson's been doing for quite some time.
That's a good point, because exactly the same thing is happening in the Superman book. They're throwing everything they can to keep their readership book
yeah.
out, you know. So, now that you mentioned the whole DC thing, I just realized that there was another person inside the DC area, DC universe, that has a hammer, that's swinging around a big old hammer. That's Supergirl.
Yeah,
she was swinging around a big old hammer out there.
Yeah, we'll go so. Zeus, hammer. Right. Okay. So whilst we're going to go and compare our hammers. Why are we going to take a break? Why don't you go and check out the advert for one of our other pods you can get on the UCPN? All right? Be back in two.
Beyond the world of DC and Marvel, there is a world that opens the imagination in ways that you've never known. The world of indie comics is here, with comic books that you didn't even know existed. Thanks to Dodgy, Al Mega, and the random dude Josh, you too will have your eyes open to new books in the indie comic universe. Check out Flipside Focus, only on the Undercover Capes Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the No Price Podcast. I am your host, Johnny Machine Hughes, Lucas, who shall not be nicknamed. We've kind of washed all the empire out of our hair, thanks to L'Oreal, because the shampoo that we all use, because we're worth it, as we said earlier. We're now jumping across to a world we haven't been to for a while, actually. I don't think we've touched on X-Box for quite some time. So, X-Factor number one. There we go. It's written by Leia Williams, art by David Baldion, colours by Israel Silver, letters by VC's Joe Caramagna. Da-da-da. Right, Lucas, take it away, my friend. What did you think?
So this is the X-Men version of Law & Order SVU. That's it. Sorry. That's it. That's all you need to know. This is the X-Men version of Law & Order SVU. But seriously, so we've got a whole cast of characters that, once again, I don't care about. Not even one.
Not even one of them. Come
not
on.
Not even one.
Not even the little Warpup. The Warpup's really cool.
Some of them made me disgusted just looking at them. I mean, Eye Boy, really? The dude with like 90 eyes all over his body.
Yeah.
I don't mean to discriminate if somebody has that type of handicap, because I know some of y'all are sitting around with two or three eyes and you got an eye around a belly button that blinks at you and everything, but Eye Boy, really, you know. So Tempest, Hope, Egg, Eye Boy, Prestige, Prodigy, Dakin, Wolverine's son. But you know, a little bit was too much was made out of his sexual preferences, from my taste.
Which is ironic, really, considering his dad's doing the mumbo jumbo left, right, and center.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I don't get it. But no, that's the way they want to swing this. All right, let I'll play.
That's what he said.
So what I will take this book as, other than being just Law and Order SVU, is that it does explain some roles. It does put some more context into what's actually happening on Krakoa, right? So, for instance, Prodigy, he was just brought back, right? And the most interesting part about it was this little dialogue that says, "Hey, I thought David lost his powers." No, he was just resurrected. Why is that important? Is because Franklin Richards, his fantastic son, has lost his powers.
Yes.
And they've been trying to figure out for like forever how to get his powers back. Just recently, the X-Men have invited Mr. Richards, Franklin Richards, to Krakoa. So that would be a way to get Mr. Franklin Richards' powers back. And we've got to remember, they've already annotated that Franklin Richards is an Omega level mutant. They admitted how powerful he is, but he is an Omega level mutant that's just out there, except for the fact that it's his power is very limited. So that is one of the most important things about this book.
Okay, that's a good point.
The other thing is, this is really about the vehicle that carries us through the story of the book is North Star. He's looking for his sister Aurora, and he can just feel that his sister is gone. So he wants to get her resurrected, but the panel of five or six or whatever, they don't want to do it without evidence that she's actually dead. So he gathers a crack team of mutants to help them find her body or whatever. And then it goes, so it's like Daken, Polaris, Eyeboy, Prodigy, and who else? Who else? Who else? Who else? I forget. Oh, Prestige. And they
Egg.
follow the trip. Oh, Egg, yeah, Egg, and Amazing Dog. I think that's
That's what they're calling it, the
yeah, Amazing
wobble.
Dog.
Wobble.
Werewolf. Isn't that really a baby or something like that?
Yes, it's a baby warbled. So,
Oh my goodness, really? So they follow the trail, and then it turns out that I guess Prestige, she can do something called chronoskimming, which is where she could see the person moving around and what they were doing, as long as she could touch the stuff and she could see all that other stuff. And then they follow the trail, and they eventually find her body. So they bring the body, they get it autopsied, and they do the whole Law and Order SVU, where they got the schematics and the computer stuff and the 3D graphic is freaking great. And then you can see that the Council of Elders, they're falling asleep in their chairs because they really don't care about the whole thing. Like, I don't care about the whole thing. And they say, "Hey, what do you want us to do?" They said, "Well, we probably should have a team whose job it is to investigate all this stuff." They say, "All right, great, you're it." And they say, "No, we don't." They went to Polaris and say, "No, I don't want to be it." And they're like, "Okay." They're like, "Hey, Northstar, you're it." And he was like, "No, I don't want to." Oh shit! I guess I'm it, right? So Northstar, he's the crack captain of this new investigative law and order team to figure out who's missing and everything. And then they also bring out these seeds. They're called Fleet Seeds. That if you have some hints about a case that might be happening, and you don't want to be seen going to the Council of Elders, you can call for these little seeds, and you go, pss, and then the seeds just go up. And if we can go to the crack team, I forget what the name of the team is actually supposed to be, and then they give them the information. And then when they go to the office, the newly built office that they can point out looks like a big old shaft penis type deal. So big they gave Johnny the shutters.
Sorry, I sneezed. I couldn't find the mute button in time.
And then when they go to the room where all the seeds are, the room is just filled with millions and millions of seeds. Turns out it's like 16.5 million mutants currently missing right now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
The other thing that's happening is that Magneto, he confronted his daughter, like, "Hey, why didn't you want to be a leader of this team? This you have a role here. Why didn't you go for it?" And she says, "Okay, what would you exactly describe my personality to be?"
Yeah, vacant, vacant is what I would
He's
say.
like, I don't know." Or and she says, "Yep, that's right. So I'm gonna go off and I'm gonna try and find out who I am." What? Usually your personality is forged by the challenges you have in life. So for her to abscond from this challenge to just go mess off with the rest of her life in order to find herself, that doesn't fall right with me. But no, hey, y'all gonna do what y'all gonna do. And then there's some rules about the rules of resurrection. The rule the res resurrection No resurrection will be initiated without proof of death. An event of force protocol. Missing mutants are generated automatically under the following circumstances. Cerebro has been unable to pull a backup from a person for no less than a month, upon which a report is automatically generated for Sage for identification and categorization. If Sage is then unable to detect this mutant, the mutant is then categorized as officially missing and the report is automatically generated for X-Factor's investigation queue.
Makes sense.
And then there was another amendment that said something about what if the mutant said that they didn't want to be resurrected?
Yeah.
So there are several mutants that I know of, and I don't have a list on me right now, that haven't been able to be resurrected. So that would be very interesting to see if that had if that little amendment had anything to do with the fact that those guys were not resurrected. I didn't see any new characters. There's a little boy that was just a terror all over the place and getting ready to kick Mr. Amazing Duck, the werepup or whatever. But they didn't give him a name. There was his mom and everything. But there was really no new characters or nothing new in this book. And the reason why I pulled that out is because this was supposed to be a $200 book.
Shut up. Who's paying $200?
This is not this is not what speculators are paying. That's what Marvel is charging for the grand book. So go ahead, Johnny. Tell me why this is a $200 book.
Well, okay. So I have no idea why it's a $200. I have no idea. I wish I could. I didn't mind this. I didn't mind it at all. I thought it was a fun little kind of side trip that has more longevity in it than the Marauders book, to be honest. And it's definitely got more longevity than Fallen Angels, because that's already been cancelled.
Terrible.
And I've always had a soft spot for Polaris. So, and you think, if you think of the people on the team, you've got Polaris and you've got Rachel Summers, you're kind of thinking they're pretty powerful characters in their own right. So we're going to get some shenanigans. The art style is a little bit different, I think, than what we've seen previously. Who do we say the art was by? Let me just check my notes. So David Baldian. He's gone for a more like a cartoony approach. And the problem being, if it wasn't... In fact, the first time I looked at this, I missed the fact that the word John Paul was in the very first panel, because I just skimmed it. And I thought, what's Wolverine doing in this book? Because that first time you see him and he's all got his bouffant black hair and he's the way his jawline's drawn in, I'm like, Wolverine? You know? What? And then obviously when I've gone to read it proper, it's like, oh yeah, it says John Paul, so you know, I know where I'm at now. I've dropped the Xbox from my pull list because nothing was happening much. This is a long-winded story to explain the team. I think it does go on a little bit when you think about the amount of powers that are on play there. But still, I think out of the books that we've read this week, I think this is my favourite.
Okay.
So for that, I'm going to flame it on. There you go.
So, okay, yeah. I mean, that's fair enough. It was entertaining. It was entertaining. There was some good moments in here.
I liked the bit where Rachel and Hope had a moment, because you forget that they're actually related. So that was good. I like that. That was cool.
Yeah, I'm still trying to find the name of this new team. X-Factor to lead the new X-Factor Investigations. That's all it's called. Yeah.
X-Factor Investigations. So Jessica Jones has got some kind of competition now.
Well, she can't. Well, can she get to Krakoa?
Is she a mutant?
She was an experiment, right? So that's the question. Like, if you were an experiment,
Well, all right. So if you were mutated rather than a mutate, can you get to Krakoa? Because that would also mean that Spider-Man couldn't get to Krakoa, because he's not a mutant. In fact, he spent a whole year back in the 90s saying the non-mutant superhero. So there you go. Captain America couldn't get there because, again, he's not a mutant because he's mutated thanks to the super soldier serum.
But here's the deal. Here's the way it works, right? There are certain things. So, for instance, the reason why Hulk was able to be mutated the way he was by the gamma X-rays is because he had a mutant
gene that allowed him to survive gene. The gamma rays. Yeah, you could argue the same for Spider-Man, he's a radiated spider bite. Yeah.
Same thing for Captain America. Every person that's ever had the X gene, they had to have that mutant or has the X powers. They had to have the mutant gene in order to do that. So think back to that new Weapon H, right? Mm-hmm. There was like 20 guys that died trying to go through that process because they didn't have the correct gene. But because he had that correct gene, which is mutant gene, he was able to accept it, and now he's just walking around. We don't know where he is.
So here's my question then. If people, I mean, this is my last question, just a ponder question. I don't need an answer. Write your answers on a postcard. if Marvel characters that have been experimented on survived because of a latent mutant gene, therefore making them effective mutants, what's the point of Krakoa in the first place? And all the superheroes, with the exception of like Hawkeye, Mockingbird, Iron Man, everybody. So basically, this Krakoa is only stopping three people in the Marvel Universe getting there. Everybody else can get there apart from Hawkeye, Mockingbird, and Iron Man.
Yeah. Think about it. Technically, Captain Marvel should be able to get there. Well, no, because she's Kree, so I don't know how that works.
She's half and half.
Half and half. Yeah.
She's half and half.
Hey, Mr. Hickman, I want answers. Answer that. Yes. Instead of all this other stuff. Instead of giving us another crazy ass book, answer all the questions that I have about this freaking island. And that's what I'll spend my money on. Vice's Law and Order, Crime SVU, and freaking, and the whole, that whole explanation where they went to explain to the elders what's going on and how they figured out who killed who, that was ridiculous. That was a waste of panels.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. This book was like it's a long story. I can see you going to a comic convention next year with Jonathan Hickman there, and you're just bombarding him with questions, and the queue will be getting longer and longer, and everyone will be like, dude, that dude in the front's hogging all his time, man. That dude in the front.
Like, that's not possible. Like, no. And he says, so what we thought was, like, no, you didn't think that. You weren't thinking at all, were you? Because if you were thinking, you would have had this. And then, no, I'm not going to accept that. No, go back and write it. No, where you going? No, right now. Start writing. I want to see what you're going to write.
He's a pen. Don't sign my book. Start writing.
I'll tell you what. Don't let me meet him in the streets. We're going to have a misery situation on our hands.
The world.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so our last book is a bit of a blast from the past, in the fact that it's Amazing Spider-Man, number 45, written by Nick Spencer, art by, for some people, the Spider-Man artist, Mark Bagley, or Bagley, depending on your accent, inks by John Dell and Andy Owens, colours by David Curiel, and letters by VCs, tell you what, Joe Caramanga, he's been doing some overtime, hasn't he?
Absolutely. I hope he has a team or something out there that you can help him out. I hope that's just the name of the company and not just the name of the guy who's sitting there with an arthritic hand trying to get all this thing going.
I'd be impressed if he doesn't like mix up the script. That'd be class, which I've said before. All right, so Amazing Spider-Man 45. In the midst of the nightmares, in the midst of there's no Mary Jane, there is a villain from the past. We are talking about the killer of Captain Jean DeWolf, or Jean DeWolf again, depending on your accent. We are talking about the Sin Eater Returns. Boom, boom, boom. Whew. Lucas, what did you think after such a grand introduction there? Amazing Spider-Man 45.
Oh, Marvel.
Right, before you go there, right, just hold that thought. I was in the comic book shop this morning where I buy back issues, and we were just talking about comics. And he said Amazing Spider-Man 45 was the best issue of Amazing Spider-Man he's read in a long time. At which point I left. But no, carry on.
He said that this was the best. When half of it was, I forget the name of this. She's not even a detective. She's a, Detective Charlie Cooper.
She's the forensic.
Which I don't understand. Yeah, she's a forensic. Like, so I don't know how some cities work, but I guess if you can be a forensics guy, person, and detective, that's whatever. And that's what half the book is. It's half of her is having this little dichotomy, talking inside of her mind about explaining who she is and what's been going on with life and yada, yada, yada. Once again, I don't care about all that stuff. I don't care who you are. This is a Spider-Man book. I paid my $4.99 for Spider-Man. You give me Spider-Man. You don't give me some sad chick, all right? Unless Spider-Man is... What's even crazier is that at no point in this book does this person and Spider-Man even link up. So how is this a Spider-Man book?
Well, she's kissed Peter Parker in the past.
Oh.
And just that, yeah, in the Marvel Universe, who hasn't, right?
Yeah, Spider-Man's a hoe. Look, Spider-Man's a gigolo. So let's just leave it at that. You know, he's all over with Mary Jane. He's out there dipping with Black Cat. He's out there dicking with Detective Charlie Cooper. He's got his little fingers, fingerly fingers all over the place, right?
He's got his web shooters all out of the place.
Just web shoot everybody. Peter Parker, you are disgusting, man. You are without morals. I can't pass this on to my kids. Come on, man. So finally we get to Spider-Man, and he's just... Oh, so I do want to bring up one thing, which is interesting, because there was that whole... it's a support group for people that are family members or lovers or whatever of superheroes. And it turns out she is part of that group. So for months now, the last person of that group was blacked out. So it turns out that person is Detective Charlie Cooper. That's it. That's the only interesting thing.
Could have been. It's not definitive, the fact that you just see it. I mean, it could be.
Well, I've seen all four or five of the other people so far, and there was only one person that was in doubt. It was her. Turns out it was her.
Cool.
To include Mary Jane, you could see her probably, like, even though it's pixelated, you can see her on, like, the left-hand side, so... No, now we know it's her. I guess one thing is, you know, Mary Jane did sit down with Detective Cooper, you know, so that's some type of cross connection other than the kiss and everything. But, you know, finally we get, you know, a sad, depressed Peter Parker because he's missing his woman, because his woman stood him up. She couldn't get to where he is. So he had all these dinner plans set up, but he can't do it because she had stuff to do. And he's a sad, broke, lonely Spider-Man, which is not what I paid my money for. Up until this car is crashing through these crowds, and it turns out it's Overdrive.
Yeah.
It says, "Hey, Overdrive is this guy who could turn any vehicle into a supercharged speedster, and is now mowing down people in the streets."
Wasn't that the villain in one of the Batman cartoons?
Most likely he's been around. So yeah, it could be. Spider-Man hops on the car, and he's trying to talk to Overdrive. Like, hey man, you gotta freaking pull it over. But Overdrive, he's scared, pantless. He's like, hey man, I can't stop, or else he's gonna catch me. And Spider-Man is looking back. He's like, okay, there's nobody. This guy has obviously lost it. So finally he gets him to, I forget whether he pulled him all the car over or he crashes the car.
Crashes the car, yeah.
Yeah, crashes the car. And then the guy's like, man, I had to do it. And then finally the Sin Eater shows up. Now Sin Eater is an old character, but here's why people might have missed it or been interested. Because I missed the same thing, right? When I was looking through the catalogs, I was like, oh, Sin Eater. I have no idea who it is. It turns out Sin Eater is an old character, so I was like, eh, I'm not going to order that much. Well, the panel that makes this the most interesting is that there's a little detective, what do you call the little things? I forget the
shield, the badge?
Yeah, the badges. There you go, badges. But instead of having the name of the old Sin Eater, it has the name of a new last name, the Wolf. So that's interesting. That means that it might be a new Sin Eater. It might not be the last one. So that's very interesting to me. Otherwise, this book is very, very silly. Very, very silly. Not the way I want to see my Spider-Man. But if nothing else, it's interesting just for that particular one.
Well, not to debunk your theory too much, but the original Sin Eater killed Captain Jean de Wolf and kept her badge as a memento. That's what the guy was doing. He used to kill them and then keep a part of them as to carry the sin, basically. The book was, I want to say, Spectacular Spider-Man, but I could be wrong. But it was definitely written by Peter David, and it had art by, in at least one of the issues, Rick Leonardi. It's a four-issue run. It's also where Daredevil and Peter Parker share identities and they kind of work out each other's, so that's good. The death of Jean DeWolf is one of the classic Spider-Man stories. What annoys me is that for all this hoopla about Spider-Man getting back to being Spider-Man, Nick Spencer has given us a rehashed Kraven, therefore spoiling Kraven's Last Hunt. You know, he's doing this, so therefore spoiling the Sin Eater story, which didn't, you know, it's a one and done. It doesn't need anything else after that, you know. I kind of think if you try and do something original, let's get something going. Let's really pull the bells and whistles out. This is just, I think Spider-Man has been my most consistently disappointing book month in, month out, with maybe the exception of the Avengers, which I think has been so, so terrible recently. So when you think these are the cornerstones of the Marvel books, you know, the Avengers and Spider-Man are probably the most instantly recognizable characters to drag John Smith off the street into a comic book store. And when you get them in there, you greet them with this book. On the flip, yeah, I'll say I'm not a big fan of Mark Bagley. I've said that a million times. But I will say, other than the pictures of Peter Parker, because I don't like the way he draws faces, I was quite okay with this. I think, you know, this is some solid work. It's definitely a mature style of art from Bagley, which reflects, I guess, Peter where he is at the moment. But, you know, for me, this book, it's an Invisible Woman. It's Invisible Woman. I was going to clobber it because they shouldn't bring the Sin Eater back, but yeah, what the hell. If I clobber it, I've hit all of them. I've hit all the Fantastic Four if I clobber this book. Clobber! There you go. yeah. Just leave the Sin Eater alone. It's such a well crafted story. You don't need to bring him back.
So as far as covers, there was something very interesting that happened.
Okay.
Going into the last couple weeks, or actually last 3 weeks, very, very late, there was another cover for this particular book that was offered. Really? I mean, and it was within the last 2 days, right? It was a photo of Spider-Man inside the flame of the Statue of Liberty, right? He was just inside there, and it looked pretty cool, right? Uh-huh. Very shadowy, very darkish. And then this Wednesday passed by, and none of the shops got it.
Mm.
Y'all ordered it. So so that means to me, I know something important is happening in this book. There's a cover out there that nobody got, that everybody ordered, nobody got. So if your store got it, you can hold on to that bad boy. But it's very interesting. Because in fact, because I was just checking a couple of other stores and they didn't get it either. So, that's all I'm saying, and I'm gonna keep an eye on it to see if anything else happens with this book.
Cool. There you go. So keep an eye out for a true ghost cover, not one of these special ones that is just down the line. But yeah, there you go. Right. Okay. So there's your four books. That's the Marvel Universe for this week via the No Prize podcast. Thank you, Lucas, for spending the time. Really appreciate it, man.
My pleasure, my
Your
pleasure.
insights are always spot on. Very good. Excellent. Well done. So all that's really left for me to say is don't forget to check out the UCPN for all your favorite podcasts, including the Definitive Crusade, Outside the Panels, and of course Lucas's favorite, Hammered Heroes.
Absolutely. Yeah,
The
so yeah, if
tequila
you
is optional on Hammered
right.
Heroes.
So if you also if you make sure that you hit up Comic Crusaders Instagram. We need 1,000 people subscribers to the Instagram. So hit up the Instagram. Make sure you hit the poll for the Comic Crusaders YouTube as well as the Undercover Capes.
Cool.
Pay attention to this because I'm also going to be doing on either later on this week some previews, catalog stuff, to ask everybody what they want to buy and give some insight to that stuff. And also there's some stuff in the works with Pullbox, if you guys know what that is. So stand by for that one.
There you
And that's all
go.
I got.
So keep it UCPN. That's kind of the message. Excellent. All right, guys, that's it. We're out. We'll see you in a fortnight. Make mine Marvel and adios.